ladies and gentlemen, to introduce Zali is I need 17 hours just to say who he is. And I haven't got 17 hours, nor you. I only can tell you, he's a mensch. That's really covering of the most important part of it. Then he has brain and heart, and he join it in together, even in his profession. So it is a lawyer, what we can't call as a liar, because he has integrity, he has really more than just a man have to have in that profession and in that position. I know he's lawyer for somebody whom I admire, who is a friend of mine, and ever since I came to the country, and he's a lawyer of other people, and dealing what I have with him, not much, because we have a very little business, but he represents me, but he makes from that little business a big business. But the funny is not for him he made the big business, and he doesn't want to be in it. He wanted to do it what he is asked for, to make it for it, and for it for us. Thank you very much to let me to introduce him, and I am debted to know you.
Thank you. Well, did you say you recorded it? Because I need my mother to hear what was said. Before I start, I need to tell you something unique about Israel that demonstrated itself in the last month. As you know, Israel last month released over 1,000 terrorists in order to release one Israeli captive soldier, Gilad Shalit, in Gaza. I do not know how many of you were in Israel at the last 2 weeks before the release took place. At the morning when the operation took place in Gaza, where everybody concentrated, all the television stations from 5 o'clock in the morning onward until the following day. The reason I'm saying that is that there are, for example, 18 American soldiers who are captive in Afghanistan. No politician called the houses of these soldiers because of a certain principle which I, in a sense, respect, but no principle when it comes to life is to be or not to be. And the principle is, by the United States government, they do not talk to terrorists, which we also, in Israel, have executed many, many times. The prime example is Operation Entebbe. In this case, we had quote-unquote suffered because we are a democracy. I have written a number of times in Israel about the way the press behaved vis-a-vis these negotiations. Many of you are business people or lawyers who are addressing business issues. When you want to take over a company, when you negotiate a deal, you certainly keep your negotiations terms close to your heart before you expose them to the other party. In this specific case, when we dealt with the Hamas, and we did not deal with them directly but indirectly, the press was forcing the government to actually give away everything, whatever the Hamas wanted. And I also have to say that some of our politicians, I do not know how many of you were in Israel in the last 5 years and saw the Shalit tent next to the Prime Minister's house. And in the tent, a member of Knesset used to come in making sure the television cameras are concentrated on them and supposedly talking to the father of Shalit, but making sure that the camera is on, saying to the father, I'll make sure when the vote comes either to the Knesset or in one case even in the government, that they give in to everything the Hamas wanted. This is not a way to negotiate or to conduct negotiations in business, and definitely not in such sensitive issues. But we have learned our lesson. We have learned our lesson, and now in Israel, we are doing something about it. The reason I'm bringing it in, because notwithstanding the disputes, and there were serious disputes about it, the atmosphere in Israel was so unique, so pure, that it added additional level of pride to me as an Israeli and as a Zionist. I want to talk to you today about the title of my subject is almost as long as the lecture itself. Europe is going through a revolution. Not necessarily a political revolution, but through a revolution. In order to understand what is happening, I need to bring an example from another country, which we all know, Egypt. Egypt has a major, serious economical problem, which is a root that people do not appreciate. A country has to challenge birth. When there are too many babies being born in a country, and they cannot be catered for, it becomes a serious problem. Because children go up. There is need of education, there is a need of products, there is a need of employment, and Egypt cannot meet the demand. The only entity in Egypt that does so is not the government. It is the Muslim Brotherhoods, which is a very dangerous phenomenon. In Gaza, there used to be the same problem. Hamas used to do exactly the same thing what the Muslim Brotherhood did in Egypt. And there was something very dangerous about these two entities. They were both honest. People were not corrupted, which was a very dangerous thing. They did not tolerate corruption. A corrupted man in Gaza used to see him hanged from a pole. When Hamas came to power, the taste of power is evidently a good one, and they have become more corrupted than they used to be, which for us is a gift, because before the corruption they believed in what they did, and whether the belief is just or unjust, a belief, an extreme belief, is a very dangerous thing to be in. Adolf Hitler believed in what he thought. He was not just a clone. He was a brilliant... Pardon? Thank you. He believed in what he wanted to do. He actually believed he was right. And the result, we all know. The danger of meeting the needs of newly born babies and youth is becoming a serious issue in Europe. What is the unemployment rate in Spain, can you guess, of youth? 42%. In France, it's going up to that level. Germany, for the first time, sees unemployment of youth. This is a dangerous situation. It is a dangerous situation in England. It is a dangerous situation literally all over Europe. The general unemployment in the Eurozone is 12.5%. Also, very, very, very alarming situation. Now, the Eurozone have something that other countries are not familiar with. Usually, every country is in full control of its currency. Who determines the level of interest on the US dollar? The Federal Reserve Bank in Washington. You have the same control here in Australia. The Israeli shekel has the same problem. Or, as a matter of fact, not a problem, the same advantage, I'm sorry. We decide, the governor of the Bank of Israel, by the way, who was a serious candidate to become the chairman of the World Bank, he decides what will be the level of the interest rate on a monthly basis. In the Eurozone, before the introduction of the euro, every country had the same problem. The mark was determined in Germany, the franc was determined in France, not anymore. The Eurozone suddenly became a coalition, and no one strong body can determine a policy of the euro. And the best example is Greece. First of all, Greece joined the euro, frankly, with misrepresentation. I do not know if you remember, in order to join the Eurozone, you had a country had to meet certain criteria. Greece did not meet these criteria. So they cooked the books. As simple as that. They cooked the books. Now, if you remember last month, Prime Minister Papandreou decided that a second level of austerity measures is unhealthy. He is going to the nation. Greece is a small country. Greece cannot threaten the Eurozone as Italy can, as Spain can, definitely as Germany can. But Greece, when they determined to go into a referendum about the austerity measures, the euro collapsed. And nothing could happen. The headquarters of the Eurozone is in Brussels. Nobody could do anything. They met in Brussels. The only way to save the situation was when everybody met in Cannes, in the south of France, brought in the Prime Minister of Greece and forced him to change his mind about the referendum. Because of the unemployment in Europe, the GDP is drastically going down. True, it goes down in Israel as well. But Israel, as a matter of fact, is so strong that we went down from 4% to 3.5% expectation for this year. England, there is a debate whether it will go from 2 to 1.5 or 2 to 1, 50%. In Germany, next year, Germany, the strongest economy in the Eurozone, they are not sure whether it will not be flat next year. So the situation over there is very, very, very serious. And we also have to remember that central banks, as the chairman of the Bank of England used to say, do not determine monetary policies. They guide, they advise, but this is done by governments. And governments cannot cope. I want to put a footnote here and talk to you for a minute about America, and as a continuation of the lecture I gave last time. I always say about President Obama, with whom objectively I don't have too much respect. It's not because he's anti-Israeli. Look at his policies, even his crown, the healthcare policies, it's all collapsing. But I need to tell you something. If he has addressed any issue that he was supposed to address, the way he addressed tax evasion, he would have been the best president of the United States. The best president of the United States. And funnily enough, he takes advantage of the weaknesses of other countries. I want to talk to you about a certain revolution that is taking now place in Switzerland. Switzerland is not part of the Eurozone. Switzerland is controlling 3/5 of the private banking in the world. It's a small country. They cannot do it. I do not know if you know, there is so much money coming now from the Eurozone converted to Swiss franc and to English banks. They are choking the banks. Choking the banks. The United States government is taking advantage of the fact that the dollar is still a major currency. Look to China. It's coming up. But whenever the dollar goes down and there is a political crisis somewhere, everybody runs either to the gold or to the dollars. The dollar goes skyrocketing. So when the United States government decided to fight Switzerland as a prime example of what the Americans tried to define as money laundering and did not. As you know, the law of money laundering is a general umbrella law. It states that he who violates a certain law which is listed as an annex to the anti-laundering of money law is laundering money. For example, if you make money out of inside trading, it's money laundering. If you make money out of selling illegal ammunition, it's money laundering. The issue of income tax in some countries constitutes money laundering. In some countries, it does not. In the United States of America, there is a big debate whether income tax should be inserted to the list of those laws, the violation of which constitute money laundering. The Congress agreed, The president said, as soon as the Senate agreed, I'm going to sign it as a law. And sure enough, the Senate said no. So what do they do in America? In America, there are two laws which are, in most countries, I don't know if you have them here, but in most countries they apply. It's called wire fraud and post fraud. You send a check by post to an account in Hong Kong, which is your account, but nobody knows it's your account. And this company buys, you are a shoe manufacturer in the United States, and you buy from the Hong Kong company for $30, and your Hong Kong company buys the shoes in China for $10. Now, the Hong Kong company supposedly is not your company, but it is your company. And you conceal this information from the taxman in the United States. So the money that you send from the United States to Hong Kong is wire fraud, and that constitutes money laundering. In the United States, they are fighting the banks in Switzerland in a very interesting manner. Those banks that have assets in the United States, you all know the story of UBS, they simply fine them $50 million a day. The head of the international banking division of UBS was arrested in Miami, and name were disclosed like water. Last week, Credit Suisse in Switzerland sent letters to its American bank holders in the United States to their American address without notifying the bankers who are usually managing the portfolio, telling the clients in the United States, you tell the IRS or we tell the IRS. Now, why did this happen? Next month, the law is going to change in Switzerland. And as a matter of fact, all the information is going to be on the surface. All the information is going to be on the surface. The reason the American government could force such an issue, even on small banks, in Switzerland there is something which is called canton banks. As you know, Switzerland is divided into cantons, and each canton has its own bank, and they were never exposed to foreign entities. They were never exposed to the United States. They were never exposed to England. So everybody thought these are safe entities. Not necessarily for tax issues. I need to tell you, people form offshore companies because a married man has a girlfriend and he wants to support her. And he doesn't want the family to know. So he puts her money in an offshore company. People do not want the children to know before 120 years that there is money, and they conceal it in trusts in Liechtenstein. It's not necessarily tax evasion. And the trust and the offshore company pay taxes in the country of origin. But when you do a transaction, when you conduct a transaction in dollar, you go to one bank here, you issue a dollar's check, an American dollar's check. And you go next door to the other bank, and you deposit the same dollar check, the clearing is in the United States. The same applies to a euro. If you have a euro check from one bank to another bank in Melbourne, it is cleared either in Brussels or in Frankfurt. And the American government said to the small banks in Switzerland, you either cooperate or there are no clearing facilities. That means these banks will not be able to transact in US dollars. And they all surrendered. In a primitive way, by the way, the Swiss were so unsophisticated the way they addressed the issue. Now they are going after the islands next to England. And England is cooperating with them in a major, major manner. Another advantage that the United States is taking, of course, is the major crisis in France and in Italy. These countries are going to take serious measures that will also be reflected, I'm afraid, in higher percentage of unemployment. Unemployment in Europe is a sensitive issue. Unemployment in Europe always brought about political extremism, and we should not underestimate it. Not even long ago, there were groups in the north of Italy, in Ireland, in England, in the north of Spain, who did not tolerate...
I'm sorry, I have to drink.
It's perfectly all right. L'chaim. They will not tolerate any participation of the government for one side of the benefiting one side of the country and thus having the other side of the country pay the price. The main example is Italy. Italy is divided between the north and the south. The south is somehow more primitive than the north. There are political parties in Milano that claim, let us divide Italy to two independent states. We do not want to know about the south. Many people who are associated with these parties are extreme. They are favorite of, I will not say fascism, but many of the ideas that are coming up there are such ideas. One of the problems that the world, the Eurozone is facing is the liquidation of the euro. Is the euro going to survive? Now, who wants this? Germany does not. Germany today is the leading economy in the Eurozone. It contributes massive amount of money to save various balance sheets of other countries in the Eurozone. There are two reasons for that. Number one, believe it, it's true, Germany did not forget to say thank you. When Germany was united after the fall of the Berlin Wall, Europe came to Germany's aid in order to finance the bringing closer the standard of living in East Germany to West Germany. But there is another reason.
Thank you very much, you're so kind. Yeah.
There is another reason. If Germany goes back to the mark, the currency is going to be so strong, Germany will not be able to export its goods to Europe. We feel it already. German goods, the export of German goods to other parts of Europe is declining, and declining in an uncomfortable way. When such products are not sold, manufacturers do not manufacture, people have to be fired, and unemployment is the name of the day. Look to the east, Russia. Russia is a very dangerous player today in Europe. First of all, look at there is a saying in English, he who does not remember the past is condemned to repeat it. Russia never wanted to antagonize Germany before the Molotov-Ribbentrop Agreement of 1937 and 1938. Russia did not want to antagonize Nazi Germany, as Chamberlain did not want to antagonize it. There is a big debate today in the international arena how to handle Iran. People simply do not understand. What is the problem with Ahmadinejad? Forget about the fact that I'm an Israeli. Supposedly, as an Israeli, I need to tell you, Nicole is sitting here. Her father, who comes from Zurich, always teaches me a lesson. He comes up to my office and he tells me, what are you going to do with Israel when Ahmadinejad is around? And in the past, I used to tell him, you're worried about me? Worry about the Europe. Go around London, see behind heroes, Islam is the future of England. In 2042, ladies and gentlemen, France is going to be the first European Western country with a majority of Muslims. 50,000 Frenchmen convert to Islam today annually. In Belgium, the most common name given to children is Muhammad. So we are somewhere. Now, what is the problem with Ahmadinejad? In Islam, as you know, there is the Mahdi, there is the Shiites and the Sunnis. Shiites are reputedly more extreme than the Sunnis, and the Sunnis have one of a grave extremism which sits in Saudi Arabia, the Wahhabis. However, like in every other religion, Islam has their own Messiah, the last Imam. He was called the Mahdi. When he comes back, he will come back, according to Islam, with a stick of Moses in his hand. In order to enhance his coming, of course you have to annihilate Christian Judaism, because they are heretics. You have to fight those Islams that went astray, but you can even sacrifice good-hearted Islamites in order to enhance his coming. So Ahmadinejad, being a Mahdi, certainly thinks that if he will throw a non-conventional weapon on Israel and kill surrounding Muslims, that is okay. Because by annihilating Israel, he is enhancing the coming of the Messiah, of the Mahdi. And if Arabs had to pay for it, so be it. Now, in Iran, there is a tremendous amount of tension between Khamenei who is the religious leader, and Ahmadinejad, the president. But there is a problem. Khamenei brought Ahmadinejad. He cannot be made a fool by throwing him out today. So there is a lot of tension between the two people. America cannot help. And I need to tell you, I participated in a meeting with someone, I cannot mention his name, he is a very important man in the United States, a Jewish fellow, with King Abdullah of Jordan. Now, if I use the words he used to describe the President of the United States, David, you will never invite me up again. I promise you. The reason is, there were no, he lost all diplomacy. American Arab leaders detest the present American administration. I want to make it clear. They do not trust them. They think they were betrayed. Simply because the Americans do not know. If you remember, before Hosni Mubarak was ousted, how did the United States play the game? Like a ping pong. Support, deny. Support, deny. It was embarrassing. It took President Obama, not Hillary Clinton, President Obama, 6 weeks to comment on what Bashar Assad was doing in Syria. 6 weeks. So the King of Jordan says to himself, how can I trust a man who doesn't have a policy? We are supporters of the United States of America. We have been supporters of the West since Sadat threw away every single Russian advisor. And look, this is the thank you we get. Because America is not leading. America is led. And Putin knows that. Putin is developing very quietly, but read the press carefully, read The Economist, read La Figaro, read even the Russian papers. Putin is slowly developing the atmosphere of the Cold War again. Putin promised the United States that he will put missiles next to Poland. The invasion to Georgia was not a mistake. Putin is strongly converting Russia into a dictatorship. Now, I cannot call it a dictatorship the way the communists will, because there are very wealthy Russians who support him. But, you know, in the past, nobody could tell the difference, the real difference, except in ideology, between Stalin and Hitler. They were both doing the same thing. Control, 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 and annihilate anything that you are that challenges you. Putin does the same thing. You will see newsmen who are being murdered. You will see business tycoons who sit in jail. Everybody who does not say yes to Putin is paying the price. Medvedev, the president of Russia, was a clown. There was a certain period of time, 6 months ago, there were rumors that Medvedev is taking an independent line. Took 48 hours to clarify the situation. 48 hours to clarify the situation. Because the United States of America is so weak today in the Middle East, watch out for Russia. Russia is trying to come in again and again and again. And the attitude of Russia to Iran is a strong demonstration of where Russia wants to go. Israel is faced with a lack of stability in the north of Israel because of that. As you know, there are rumors in Lebanon that if the Bashar Assad falls, there will be a revolution in Lebanon. They will not tolerate anymore any kind of division between the various sects, the Druze, the Christians, and the Muslims in Lebanon. And Hezbollah is armed to its teeth in order to take over the country, which will be a serious problem, not necessarily for Israel, but for everybody. Of course, they do so with the backing of Iran. I need you to remember that the United States in the past had experience both in Iran, when they brought back the Shah, and in Lebanon, the invasion to Lebanon in the 50s. This will not happen again. America does not have neither the political or military stability in order to protect Syria's locales. Do forgive me. President Obama was here, he was preparing my visit. And when he came to Australia, he made a speech. Do you remember what he promised? He promised to bring in 2,500 American soldiers because he believed that it's going to be
precisely.
He's going to be problem with the Chinese in the Chinese Sea. Come on, folks. I come to Australia, I fall asleep. You are such wonderful people, you are so relaxed. I mean, it's what does he want? Okay, so that's what America can do today. They cannot protect Europe, they cannot challenge Europe, they cannot challenge the Middle East, they can't even challenge South America. So 2,500 soldiers to wake you up, folks, that there is a world somewhere and you should be somehow involved in this world. Leslie, I have to tell you something. The fact that you knew to point out immediately to the China Sea, Leslie, be honest with me. How many people knew that, as a matter of fact, that America accept you? Okay, you know about it. How many people in this room knew that there is a serious problem, is there, between Australia and China about the Chinese? Raise your hands. Leslie, you're alone. You're alone. And this is the situation. And America does not have proportions in what it is doing. So, let's talk about comparative to Israel. The Eurobonds are all downgraded. Before that, I just want to make one more point. Do you remember 2 months ago, or 6 weeks ago, the downgraded of American credit to AA from AAA? Now, let's think about it for a minute. Well, what happened? A country usually, Greece might teach us another lesson, but a country usually does not go bankrupt. That's the name of the game. Especially when you control your own currency. That's why I say Greece might teach us a different lesson. Greece, unless they go back to the drachmos, will have a certain problem. But the United States of America is in full control of its currency. Plain. Pardon?
Plain.
Right. Absolutely. They could print. What happened? That they could not extend the deficit to $1,200,000,000,000. That's a small amount of money, is it? Why? A lot of people in the United States lost a lot of confidence in the political system because of it. You should know that. Because the consideration not to print more money, as Leslie says, had nothing to do with economics. Had to do with the literal war. There is hatred between the Republicans and the President of the United States. And they are determined to bring down the President, whatever the price may be. So you should know, the bringing down to AA, the credit line of the United States, the credit credibility of the United States, is politics and politics and politics. Nothing to do with economics. Let's talk about Israel on the other hand. Israel has by far the best chancellor. Thank you. Israel has by far the best chancellor of the central bank in the world. Stanley Fischer came from the United States, speaks fluent Hebrew. He is a phenomenal individual. He was a candidate to become the chairman of the World Bank. Israel's banking stability is beyond doubt. If you told me 2 years ago that American AAA banks will vanish from the face of the earth, will evaporate, I will send you all. Is there a mental hospital in this area? You will all go there. But it happened. It will never happen in Israel. By the way, there is, of course, an insurance in the United States, you know, up to $250,000 for every deposit. Israel doesn't have it. Israel had twice experienced a collapse of a bank. Israel British Bank and Bank Mizrahi. Every depositor got every penny back. Even those depositors in Israel British Bank who were depositing money in the English branch in London. The economy of Israel is 3.5%, which is very high compared to European. The stability is tremendous. Real estate in Israel is doing phenomenally well for two reasons. First of all, it's a beautiful country. And you have to understand, when there is a crisis in London and the real estate goes down, because usually the potential person to buy the real estate is English. If you have an apartment in Fifth Avenue in New York, the potential client is an American. In Israel, no. If someone in America cannot buy, someone from Australia will buy, or from New Zealand, or from Belgium, or from France. There is another reason I have to tell you. People lost confidence in the banking industry in Europe. And massive amount of money is going to real estate around the world. And a very distinguished proportion of it comes to Israel. Israel really became a top player in the European market, in the American market, in the world market. High tech in Israel is phenomenal. People are making a lot of money in high tech in Israel. Investors in high tech in Israel is tremendously important. Israel is helping other countries. I mentioned, what's your name? I'm sorry? Rivka. I mentioned to Rivka, we are involved here in a massive, it is the biggest case today that we have in our office, a massive case of money laundering, billions of dollars, a lot of governments are involved there. And I want to tell you, the only source of stability in these litigations that could bring down governments, these litigations could bring down a very sensitive government somewhere around the world, not Israel. And I want to tell you, the only rock of stability in this major, major, major litigation is the government of Israel. And everybody looks up to Israel for help. The United States government, the government that is involved on the other side, and of course the various financial entities involved. I am just going to end with reminding you that the Arab world does not consist only in the countries surrounding Israel. Remember Tunisia, look at Yemen. I need to tell you, Israel is a rock of stability politically for the world. There is a man who just left the State Department. His name is Danny Ross. Dennis Ross was a top advisor to the United States government, who wrote a fascinating book recently. I strongly recommend that you read it. You will really know a lot about the stability of the world. And Dennis Ross really looks at Israel in an amazing manner. Because of its stability politically, it's a democracy. You have here today, he called me up yesterday, David Landau. David Landau was the chairman of the board of Haaretz, he was the editor-in-chief of Haaretz newspaper. The only thing I agree with him, he's a religious Jew, very much to the left. The only thing I agree with him 100% when he says, Amen, Yehi Shmei Rabam Vorach, I cannot agree with him more. I agree 100% with what he says. But that's about it. In Israel, we can absorb it. We have a lot of political fightings. Everybody in Israel knows about everything. Even if they don't know, they know. 100%. It's a stable country, second to none, definitely in the Middle East, and beginning to be in Europe. Look at Europe carefully. France is going to surrender a lot of its democratic laws if they do not want to be taken over by Islam. So when people are trying to look where to diversify themselves, and folks, diversification will be the name of the game in the future. Geographical diversification. It's legal. You are allowed to have assets outside of your country as long as you pay taxes in your own country. And I'm telling you, diversification will be the name of the game, because the world is shrinking and becoming smaller. And you have to diversify to such places where you know you are not going to be hurt. One last remark, Leslie, China. China is a booming economy today. It went down from 10% to 9.5%. Nicht schlecht. Not so bad. However, I need to tell you something about China. China can't change overnight. China, first of all, changed the philosophy of politics. Until recently, we all thought, if you are not a democracy, you cannot be a successful economy. Singapore was an example to the contrary, because it is a small country.
It is a dictature.
A dictature, yes, which is not a democracy. But China showed differently. It's a massively big country, tremendous gap between those who have and those who have not, but it's still active. China is in the center of a danger of earthquakes. And I'm telling you now, if you look at the development of China, one thing they simply ignore, they don't care. No safety precaution against earthquakes. The first earthquake that will challenge China, China will go back to a very ugly period of time. So yes, China is very close. It's the second biggest automaker in the world, breathing at the neck of the United States. It is the biggest creditor of the United States. I'm afraid it's a question of time. So don't look so much east, but now you are safe. You've got 2,500 soldiers there. So, but don't look so much to the east. Look to the west, to the east, China. look at Israel. Israel, not from a Zionistic point of view, not from a Jewish point of view, from an economic and healthy economy point of view, study it. It is worth studying. David, thank you very much for the invitation. Leslie, you're a tremendous host.
One thing I want to tell you.
Please.
Israel has one order. As long as we are in force, we using our brain. And then, thanks God, we have plenty of it.
That's true. That's true. We invest in education. Absolutely right.
I want to thank everybody for being here, for taking the time to come. Thank you, David Erdiger from JBD. I just asked you how long has been this going on, and you actually only said a year. I really thought it was way longer than that. I think you've done an amazing success in creating these lunches for the Jews in the city of Melbourne. Thank you, the Erdi Group, Mr. Erdi, for allowing us to have a lovely lunch, to allow us to have the space here. I wanted to take 1 minute. I feel like I may be tall, maybe taller than you, but I feel like an aunt. You really, when it's dangerous to speak after somebody like Mr. Jaffe, who really has such an amazing knowledge on so many fronts. But I want to touch, for Mr. Erdi, I wanted to tell you a little bit of the one of the many hats that Mr. Jaffe wears is the head of the Jerusalem Great Synagogue, which many of you would have known about or perhaps even been there. The reason for it to even have ever been created is the most interesting story that I only heard a few years ago, was that in 1968, an individual came to Mr. Maurice Jaffe, the late honorable father of Mr. Zadi, to his office with a letter. And in the letter it stated that Rav Kook, the chief rabbi at the time, he had written in that letter saying, when I stand atop of the mountain of Jerusalem, I look down and I see amazing rooftops of mosques. I see crosses on top of churches. I don't see anything representing us Jews. And I want a synagogue that will stand way above, beyond everybody else's entity. And this is what Mr. Moses Jaffe took on board, and he made a dream actually come true. In 1982, this amazing edifice was standing way above as an icon for Jerusalem to be the entity for the Jews of the nation of Israel. So it is with the massive success that he has done so, and thank you for being here and being part of this lunch today.